The Pope has come out and said that it's about time for priests to be married. That's a huge deal. German official wants $50 million fines for social media hate posts. Looks like the blizzard in New York City is a bust. Taxpayers are not filing their return, or at least they're procrastinating. Gee, I wonder why. Maybe it's because nobody has money. And we have Rand Paul on to talk about Obamacare, a guy who is standing firm on repeal. Rand Paul joins us right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Rand Paul's joining us in just a few minutes, waiting for him. He's stuck on the floor. We're waiting for him to call in. One thing to talk about changing an allegiance to another country when a new president is elected, there's another thing in going ahead and doing it. But that is what seems to be happening with New Zealand. The number of Americans who have applied to grant citizenship rose to 170 in the 12 weeks following the election, up from 100 for the same period last year. You know, what's really weird is nobody used to want to give up their American citizenship. Nobody would ever do that. Now, the number of people who are renouncing their citizenship or looking for citizenship elsewhere, dual citizenship, is remarkable. Why in the past when we were growing up, why would anyone need another passport? Why would you want another passport? You didn't need it.
It was the opposite.
It was the opposite. You want everybody, the world wanted the American passport. Now, look at the number of people that are saying, I want out of this. And I'm not sure that it is. I'm not sure that it is because of Donald Trump. I think it's New Zealand, for one, is a place that everybody thinks is just going to be left alone because it's, you know, out in the middle of nowhere, and so they just think, oh well, I'm going to go to New Zealand and I'll escape whatever is coming. I don't think so. I mean, China. If China expands, if the United States falls and China doesn't, China expands and takes over that entire side of the globe. You want to live under Chinese rule?
Not so much.
No, thank you. No, thank you. If you could get citizenship anywhere, where would you get it?
St. Kitts. It's available for $250,000.
Not that you've looked?
Not that I've looked.
Not you looked in price.
You can Comoros is going to be the cheapest option for you guys if you need
what
it.
What is?
Comoros.
Yeah, it's off the coast
off of
Madagascar.
Africa. Yeah. And for about $40,000 per person.
You can just buy citizenship.
You can buy citizenship. Yeah. Citizenship.
Most of these
sale.
Countries you can buy.
Many of them.
Yeah. It doesn't. They don't say it that way, but they say if you invest in our country.
I will say, Chinese threat aside, if I was going to go anywhere else, it would probably be Australia or New Zealand, because those are just beautiful countries. And a long way from everybody else.
Yeah, New Zealand has stayed pretty much off the radar for everybody.
Yeah.
New Zealand would be one of them.
Canada would be an obvious choice because it's so much like us. It's like our little brother or sister.
Yeah, Canada would
second
be
second cousin twice removed or
something. The other thing, I don't know if you can marry though. Isn't it kind of like marrying your sister?
I mean,
you can't
like
leave
that.
This citizenship and go to that one. Your children will be born with all kinds of defects and everything else. I think they're too close. But the other one is that nobody wants to do is Israel. I would do Israel in a heartbeat.
I wouldn't mind Israel either. You know, there's the obvious terrorist threat.
Yeah, I know, but at least they're going to stand.
And they take it pretty seriously.
Yeah, you're going to be a ground zero with a bunch of people who are wide awake.
Right. And I could see dual, but why renounce?
I wouldn't.
I don't think.
I don't want to renounce. I wouldn't renounce. No. Let me go to Rand Paul, who is with us. Hey, Rand, how are you, sir?
Hey, Glenn. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Tell us the Obamacare thing. This is, you know, yesterday Paul Ryan said, "Oh, the numbers from CBO look great," while Donald Trump was saying we can't pay attention to the CBO numbers. And I don't even know what the GOP is thinking. This is not what they promised the people.
Well, you know, I first started running in about 2009, was elected in 2010 on repealing Obamacare. We ran on it in 2014, 2016. Every time we won on a message of completely repealing the thing. In fact, some of the leadership, I was at their speeches saying, repeal the thing, root and branch, tear it out, root and branch. And now they want to only partially repeal it and replace it with Obamacare Lite. So it's really a disaster, and I'm doing everything possible to say, let's keep our promise. And our promise was to completely repeal it, not replace it with, you know, Ryan Care or Obamacare Lite.
So we talked to Mike Lee yesterday, and he seems pretty tough on this as well. Do you have any allies there that are going to stand?
Mike and I are going to the White House today with a few other people, and we're going to keep telling them what we've been telling them. We need to separate repeal from replace, and there are good aspects of replace that we do need to talk about, but we need to do just repeal. We don't agree with Paul Ryan that we should keep subsidies, that we should keep the Obamacare taxes, that we should keep the mandate, and that we should bail out the insurance companies. Those things we just are never going to agree with him on, so he needs to strip those off the bill. Let's do a clean repeal. But then replace, the mistake Paul Ryan's making is there are aspects of replace that would give millions of people health insurance, would give millions of people health insurance at a lower cost. And these are the buying pools that I've been talking about. If we let people join a healthcare association, imagine this, people that belong to credit unions. There's probably, you know, 10 million people in the country that belong to credit unions. What if they had one person negotiating with them, with the insurance company? They'd have 10 million people that would be negotiating a great deal on price. That would bring prices down. And when you have that many people, you get to demand the terms of the contract, which means they won't drop you. They won't raise the rate if your spouse gets sick. This is part of the way the marketplace would work if we free it up. But nobody's talking about the good aspects. They're all talking about how many people get Medicaid, when in reality, wouldn't you rather have real insurance than Medicaid?
Randy, a lot of people are saying that you can't repeal a full, you can't get a full repeal unless you have 60 votes, and you don't have 60 votes. What do you say to that criticism?
Well, there is a technical aspect to the way the budget works that they're saying that repealing all the regulations, like pre-existing mandate, all the essential health care mandates, all these things that dictate what goes into your insurance that are part of Obamacare, they may be technically right that the way the laws are written or the rules are written about the budget, that we can't do it on the budget reconciliation. There are other people making the argument, and Senator Cruz is one, saying that we should challenge that the Budget Act actually says the person sitting in the chair, the senator, makes a decision, not the parliamentarian. I think that's a discussion worth having.
So what are the odds? You're going to the White House today. Who are you meeting with?
You know, that's still undetermined. It may be with the president. It may be with some of the president's advisors. I think it is worth going because the president has said he is open to negotiation. He needs to know how unhappy conservatives are and that conservatives did not run on a message of Obamacare Lite. And I'll take that message. But I'll also take the message that it's been a mistake for them to put repeal and replace together. Because if they pass repeal and replace together and it's Obamacare Lite, and the insurance rates still continue to go through the roof and the thing continues to unravel, we're going to be blamed for all of this. I think we should put forth also a separate replacement bill that includes expanding the health savings accounts, buying pools, getting rid of all the regulatory mandates. We need to put that forward separately, win or lose. We need to have a vision for how we'd make things better. But my fear is if they pass Obamacare Lite, that the insurance markets will continue to unravel. In fact, they believe that also. That's why they're putting the bailout of the insurance companies in there. They understand that the insurance markets will still unravel and that Obamacare Lite's not going to work either. That's why they have the bailout of the insurance companies in there.
What about the argument, Rand, that, you know, we've got Obamacare and we know that's an F and this is at least a slight improvement on it. Shouldn't we take the slight improvement rather than stick with Obamacare?
You know, there were two articles written last week predicting that it gets worse. Now, one of them is by somebody who's almost always opposed to us, Paul Krugman, but occasionally he makes a valid point. The other one was by Megan McArdle. They both make the point that if you let people buy insurance after they're sick, they will. And that's why the insurance premiums are going up. Healthy people are not buying it, and sicker people are getting in the insurance pool. That continues after Obamacare is repealed if you replace it with Ryan Care, because under Ryan's plan, they still let people buy insurance after they're sick, but they get rid of the individual mandate to it. If you keep part of Obamacare, the idea that you can buy insurance after you're sick, the insurance markets don't work, and it actually probably is worse under Ryan's bill than it is currently.
Yeah, but at least we don't have the taxes. At least, I mean, this is the case that, yeah, yes, it's going to fail. It's going to be awful. But at least this mitigates some of the pain for some people.
Well, and it all depends on where you want to measure it from. So if we want to measure it from what we promised, complete repeal, then you'd get rid of all the taxes. And then you'd also get rid of all the mandates as well and the cost. Right now, they're saying, oh, it's going to save $300 billion. Well, complete repeal would save about $1 trillion. So really, they're comparing it to keeping Obamacare, but no one really advocated. No Republican's been advocating for keeping Obamacare. So we should compare their proposal to complete repeal. If you have complete repeal, you're going to save the taxpayer, you know, probably $2 trillion, because not only about $800 billion in taxes, you're going to save the taxpayer about $1 trillion in expenses. And when people talk about Medicaid and, oh, all we're going to do all this with Medicaid, realize they're borrowing the money from China. We have no money up here. It's not free. It's what I call dishonest accounting.
Yeah.
Obama said, oh, here, you can all have free Medicaid. But the problem is there's no money up here. We borrow $1 million a minute and owe $20 trillion. So it's not really free. It's dishonest accounting. What we should be trying to do is get people less expensive insurance and better insurance. And you can do that by freeing up people in the individual market to join a group so they can get a lower price.
How do you respond to the Democrat criticism that if you repeal this bill, then so many millions of Americans are going to lose the insurance they have?
I think you have to talk about what our replacement should be. Ryan's talking about replacement being Obamacare light. And so when he cuts the subsidies in half but keeps them, that's the argument he's stuck in. So instead of insuring the government insuring 24 million, the government's still going to insure people under Ryan's plan, but half as many. What we really need to be talking about is instead of, you know, how many the government's going to insure, we should be talking about how the marketplace could insure people.
Yeah.
Right now, there's 11 million people in the individual market. This is where the real problem is. And I recognize the problem and I'm very sympathetic to it. I practiced medicine for 20 years. Know what a hardship it is for people. But if you are a plumber and it's you and your wife on your plan and you buy insurance by yourself, you're an insurance pool of two, people do worry that their wife or their spouse gets cancer and their rates go through the roof or they get kicked off their insurance. Mm-hmm. Our plan, our replacement plan, the replacement plan I put forward 2 months ago would allow every plumber, every person in pest control, every individually owned person who has a small business, we would let them join a group. If my plan were to pass, there would be no one left in the country that doesn't have a plan, that doesn't have pre-existing protection, not because the government mandates it, but because we allow them to join a group. What person in the country would not join a group? And even a business, let's say your business there that you have 400 employees, wouldn't you rather be in a pool of 4,000 or 4 million? And you would be able to do that. You could join a credit union. You could join NFIB. You could join
NRA. That's our problem here. That's, I have
any group.
I have 300 employees. I have 251 employees or something like that. And that's not a big enough group. And if I could join a bigger group, I would join a bigger group because my insurance rates go down.
What are the odds of getting a vote on your bill, Rand? Is there? Do you think there's any chance of it coming to at least see where people stand on it?
You know, 2 months ago it was zero. Now I'd say about 10 or 20%. Even yesterday, see, here's the thing, and this is what Paul Ryan has not done a very good job with. Paul Ryan actually agrees, and so does Tom Price. They actually agree with the health associations, the buying pools. But they haven't been talking about it because they think replacement is half of Obamacare. They think it's keeping the subsidies and all that. So they haven't been talking about the really good market stuff that actually doesn't cost the government anything. Letting people join insurance pools and letting them join a nationwide group insurance pool or a buying pool doesn't cost the government anything. If they would have been talking about that as the replacement and saying we'd put it forward at the same time, instead they're talking about some of the things I'm talking about in phase three, which is, I don't know, a year from now, 6 months from now, no one is going to be talking about this. Once the vote is over on repeal, the debate is over. So the replacement needs to be exactly at the same time. And because they're not talking about the good stuff that could come from repeal, all we're hearing is about the Republicans are meanies and going to cut off all the free, insurance, the free subsidies and the free government insurance. That's why you have to talk about replacement at the same time. It's why I brought replacement up 2 months ago, because we need to be talking about the good things that the marketplace could do if we released and unleashed the marketplace.
Yeah, real quick, so I'm out of time, but is there any sense up on the Hill from the Republicans? Have they learned a single damn lesson that if they screw the American people on health care, ram it through in the middle of the night like Obama did, or don't really fully repeal this thing, that they're just not going to win in 18? Is there any sense that they've learned anything?
It's amazing that people have gotten elected and are completely clueless about the politics of this. The people who elected us for complete repeal. So you're going to make the people who voted for you very unhappy, and then you're splitting the baby by giving us Obamacare Light, and it's not going to work. I promise you, if the Ryan bill passes, insurance premiums will still rise. And so a year from now, insurance premiums are going to be going up 20%. There's still going to be only one insurer or no insurer in half the markets or more. And everybody's going to be going, well, Republicans did it. Republicans gave us this Ryan plan, and it's worse. I promise you it's going to be worse. So we need to be introducing the market repeals, whether they win or lose. And in fact, if Democrats vote against the replacement package that we put up separately, then it's on them. It's not on us if they won't vote for our replacement bill.
Rand, thank you so much. We'll be saying a prayer for your visit to the White House today, you and Mike Lee. And we sincerely wish you luck and blessings that somehow or another ears will hear you. Thank you so much, Rand. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Very excited for this week of serials. Begins today. It is the history of communism. This one of the things that I don't think the youth has ever been taught. And this is something that we need to get out to everybody.
The youth thinks communism is communing with nature, I think.
Yeah. No, they do. They think socialism is a way to communicate.
Yeah.
So socialism and communism, the truth on communism, all this week on the serials. It begins next. But you can find it at glennbeck.com/serial. Please take this and spread this to everyone you know. The truth on communism in 4 episodes. The first one is coming up next.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
We've always been told that genocidal dictators of the world, they're just manifestations of the hateful right. That the left-wing icons like Che, Mao, Stalin need to be understood in context. But we live in a time that seems to move faster than time. A place that seems to have no place for truth. A reality that seems to have no connection to reality. So, to get our feet on solid ground for the future, we must first walk through the past with our eyes wide open.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
That is modern conservatism in a nutshell. Yet we're always told that Nazi Germany, who controlled every aspect of citizens' lives, is somehow conservative or right-wing. Is it true? Or is it an attempt to distract us from other, much more inconvenient similarities?
Author of Liberal Fascism, The Secret History of the American Left, From Mussolini to the Politics of Meaning, explains.
They say, you know, Hitler was a right-winger because of X, Y, and Z. I say, well, what was Stalin's position on X, Y, and Z? The common assumption is that the Nazis were a right-wing phenomenon. They were a right-wing party, that Hitler was a man of the right and all the rest. And there are a lot of problems with this. His social agenda was for expanding universal access to healthcare. It was for expanding access to education. It was for cradle-to-grave welfare state. It was for attacking big business and high finance. People say, well, Hitler abolished labor unions. He was right-wing then. Well, how did labor unions do under Stalin, under Fidel Castro? Almost anything you can find on a checklist that allegedly proves Hitler was a right-winger, you can apply to almost any one of the major communist dictators of the 20th century, and the similarities are almost identical.
Today, this idea may seem controversial, but as the Nazis were rising to power, it wasn't controversial. It was common knowledge. November 28, 1925, a tiny article printed in the New York Times describing the early internal struggle for the identity of the Nazis. A riot broke out after a Nazi speaker claimed that Lenin was the greatest man second only to Hitler, and the difference between communism and the Hitler faith was very slight.
The communists in the Reichstag voted almost uniformly with the Nazis. They voted in lockstep, and the slogan for the communists in the Reichstag was first brown, then red. The general understanding among the communists, among socialists back then, was that Nazism was a stepping stone towards the ultimate victory of socialism and communism.
While Hitler certainly opposed communism outwardly, he did so mainly because he disagreed with its internationalism.
He was a proud German, a German nationalist, a German jingoist, not a patriot, but a nationalist. And he rejected that element of Marxism. But he embraced socialism entirely. He embraced the idea of racial solidarity, of socialism for one race.
Even in Mein Kampf, he acknowledged that the movements were so close that if not for the focus on race, his National Socialist movement would really do nothing more than compete with Marxism on its own ground. But Nazi Germany had no corner on the market of racism and anti-Semitism.
Marx, we need to remember, was Jewish. He was a self-hating Jew. He rejected Judaism and all of the rest, but he was Jewish. And Hitler hated Jews. I mean, this is not a newsflash. Hitler was a passionate anti-Semite, and he saw Marxism as corrupted with a deep-seated Jewish nature. The irony here is that so did Marx. Marx was a real anti-Semite. He wrote about the Jewish problem a generation before the Nazis started talking about the Jewish problem. He said how we had to purge the Jewish spirit from Western civilization, from global civilization. He had horrible racist things to say about Jews and of blacks. And Hitler very much inherited that Marxist analysis when it came to things like Jews and other races.
Sometimes it's hard to tell Hitler and Marx apart. Who wrote that Germany's neighbors should accept the physical and intellectual power of the German nation to subdue, absorb, and assimilate its ancient Eastern neighbors? That's Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels, authors of the Communist Manifesto, almost a century before the Holocaust. Hitler's underlying admiration for Marxism was obvious.
In Mein Kampf, Hitler writes about the Nazi Party flag, which is this big red flag with a white disc in the middle and the swastika in the center. Hitler explains it quite clearly in Mein Kampf that the red, the big sea of red that the swastika was in, was intended to attract socialists to his movement. The red flag was the emblem of the communists. It's the reason why we call them the Reds.
But it went deeper than similar ideology and imagery. Until Germany launched a surprise attack on the Soviet Union in 1941, the Nazis and the Soviets worked together. They even put it in writing, signing what was originally sold as a non-aggression pact. But just weeks later, they would invade Poland from opposite sides. But is this just a story of brutal iron-fisted dictators, or something inherent in the philosophy? The fathers of communism, Marx and Engels, believed that societies would evolve from capitalism to socialism, but they acknowledged that there were still what they called primitive societies that hadn't even evolved into capitalists yet. They called them racial trash. As the revolution happens,
The classes and the races, too weak to master the new conditions of life, must give way. There was only one thing left for those too far behind in the process of societal evolution. The chief mission of all other races and peoples, large and small, is to perish in the revolutionary Holocaust. All of these systems are based on the idea that we know better, that the little people are getting in the way of our plan, and, well, we'll just go around them, and then we have to destroy them. This arrogance always ends exactly the same way. One of history's worst examples, the genocide you've never heard of. We share that in the next episode.
Tomorrow on the Glenn Beck Program. In Chapter 2 of The Truth About Communism, you'll learn how Stalin intentionally starved his own people. Listen live or online at glennbeck.com/serials.
I will tell you that Jonah Goldberg taught a lot of this to me just in his book, Liberal Fascism, that if you haven't read, some of that interview actually came out from that time when we were doing a serial on liberal fascism. Years ago, and you'll notice in that how he is talking about nationalism, and you hear that he's comparing nationalism to Nazism, and nobody batted an eye. Everybody knew that, you know, 4 years ago. Everyone knew that nationalism was the stepping stone to Nazism, populism, nationalism. Now, not so much. What's changed? The history, the facts, or us? We have changed. This is a really important series that your kids need to hear. The history of communism, all this week. You can find it at glennbeck.com/serial. Use it, even if you don't homeschool your kids. Sit down this week and watch these. They're fully produced with video, so you can listen to them in your car, or you could actually watch them. They're free at glennbeck.com/serial.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
All right, so yesterday the CBO came out and Paul Ryan said, these numbers are pretty good, right? This is better than expected. And Donald Trump said they were so bad that you shouldn't trust the CBO.
Yeah.
I don't know. Are they on the same team?
And Newt Gingrich said it was so bad that they're corrupt and they should be disbanded.
Yes. So what's the truth here, Stu?
Well, there's some...
The big stumbling block for the Trump administration is that they're saying 14 million more people will be uninsured through this new bill, right?
And
they disagree with that because he wants everybody insured. He promised that in September of 2015,
yeah,
right?
And means it, too, that everybody will be insured.
Yeah.
And it will be a big, beautiful thing. Medical care that you will not believe.
And, you know, look, there's some of this, like, let's start with the enrollment. The enrollment numbers, while, you know, they look really bad, are actually not as bad as advertised. These are differences.
For the new bill or the old one?
The new one. So the difference of the new bill, the GOP bill, they're saying it's 14 million and it's even more than that going forward. It's 20-something million by 2026.
Mm. Yikes.
Those numbers are subtracted from what is projected from Obamacare, not that what's actually happening. So that's an important distinction in that they're saying they're going to add another 9 million people to Obamacare. And they're saying, well, they won't get those 9 million people. But their projections have been way, way off so far. And other outside organizations think that number is going to be more like, it's going to be basically flat going forward on Obamacare under the current law. There's a couple of other differences, but the difference, if you want to, you know, look at it from a more rational perspective, you're looking at probably more like a shrinking of 5 million instead of
why would
24.
I look at it from a rational perspective? That doesn't
it doesn't get anybody elected.
We don't want to do that at all.
Doesn't sell any newspapers.
No.
Doesn't sell.
No.
Doesn't,
no,
sell doesn't any, make you watch TV.
No. Listen to the radio. Doesn't do any of it.
There's a good piece of Forbes. I'll tweet out at World of Stew if you want to read the details as to that, where that 5 million number comes from. But
oh my gosh.
Okay. I'm sorry. That's why I said I would tweet it out. You can read it if you want to.
If I could get you and Mike Lee together, just talking stat. Oh my gosh, it'd be great.
Another number you're seeing is $337 billion of deficit reduction. So this is going to help the budget by $337 billion
over
10 years.
Over a 10-year period, right?
Now, there's a couple ways to look at that. One, the way the left is trying to point it out is $337 billion isn't that much of a savings over 10 years. They're projecting another $8.6 trillion over that time period. So $337 billion isn't that much. However, it's a little bit better than that when you look at the details of how they get to $337 billion, which is they are cutting something like $1.2 trillion in spending, and then in addition to that, cutting $880 billion of taxes. So they're cutting spending pretty dramatically, and they are cutting taxes pretty dramatically, and the effect of that is a $337 billion deficit reduction. So, I mean, look, cutting a $1.2 trillion is not nothing, and $880 billion of taxes is not nothing. So those are two pretty good pieces of this. I think by saying $300 billion in deficit reduction, it makes it look like nothing. It's not nothing. I mean, it's not as good as I want. It's not as good as Rand Paul is offering, but it's not nothing. There is the whole idea of premiums is really sort of sticky in that they expect premiums, the CBO, again, if you trust them, predicts premiums will rise.
With my life.
Rise. Premiums will rise by about 20%. Right away, as people change.
That's what Rand Paul said.
What?
But, yes. Yeah. But, however, over the long term, they'll actually drop.
By 2020 or something.
Yeah, by 2020, they'll be actually 10% lower, which is a big savings when it comes to healthcare, 10% lower, but it's going to take a long time.
Kills them out of the gate.
The point there is that you don't survive enough elections to actually enforce the 2020 guidelines because you're going to lose because of the early increases.
Yeah.
And that's a big problem. The cutting of the Planned Parenthood thing is pretty interesting. They think they'll save $234 million that would go to Planned Parenthood. However, there would be $77 million.
Well, they're getting $500 million now. Where's the rest of that savings? They get $500 million in federal funding now.
I don't know. It's in the CBO report. That's their summary, but I have not looked into the details. You're right, though. It is usually more than that. But they say $234 million over 10 years would be saved, but $77 million would actually be lost because we'd have all these new babies to deal with.
Oh,
that is legit. So we'd only save $156 million, not $234, because there'd be $77 million in new baby costs. Which, by the way, those are costs I like.
Yeah.
You know what? People being alive, good costs. Good costs.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, that's probably a good thing. Another thing that's kind of interesting is Donald Trump in particular, but many Republicans criticize Democrats and Obamacare specifically for cutting Medicare and Medicaid expenditures. They're saying, well, you're taking money. They're underfunding these programs, these important programs. Now, at the time, we said, wait a minute, what are you talking about? Aren't we Republicans? Like, all of a sudden, we're for these giant national programs? Well, this plan, which Trump and Ryan obviously are both supporting, maintains those cuts that they criticized throughout the entire, through 2012 all the way up to very recently. So those remain, which makes you wonder if they actually cared about them in the first place. My guess was no.
Your guess was no?
My guess was no.
Yeah. My statement would be no.
Well, maybe they just changed their mind. All of a sudden, they just like the opposite of what they used to like. Yeah, that happens.
Back in a minute.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.